I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. The Zika virus continues its spread across the Americas, and coming up on The World, we're going to take a closer look at what we know and what we don't know about this virus. But first, I wanted to get some historical perspective from Sonia Shah. She's the author of Pandemic, Tracking Contagions from Cholera to Ebola and Beyond.
Cholera, you know, it's actually caused by a bacteria that lives in marine environments naturally. But when people started colonizing wetlands in the 18th and 19th century in the Sundarbans, which is part of South Asia, the British Raj decided to cut down all of these wetlands and turn them into rice fields. And people came into very close contact with this marine bacteria probably for the first time. And it started to adapt to human bodies and become, you know, highly virulent. So cholera emerged out of Asia in 1817. By 1832, it was in Europe, and then it had spread right across the Atlantic into the United States, where we were building canals. You know, and we had steamships. And so we had this kind of perfect watery highway for cholera to penetrate again and again.
So boats back then, today we travel by air. Where have you seen air travel accelerating the same dynamic that we once saw with ships?
I mean, Zika virus is a perfect example. You know, we had Zika virus in the 1940s and probably even before that in the equatorial forests of Africa and Asia. But it wasn't until just recently that it was able to hop a flight, basically from Asia into Rio. Once it got there, it reached these vast susceptible populations, you know, because there's been massive urban expansion across the tropical Americas. And that has allowed the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which is very efficient at spreading Zika virus around, to, you know, start to ferry this virus around. And that's why we've seen this huge explosion of Zika virus now.
You went to the wet markets in Asia. What are they, and how are they a breeding ground for human flu pandemics?
So these are markets where wild animals are to be sold live to consumers. So these were animals that in nature would never encounter each other. And yet in these wet markets, they're crammed really close together in these cages where they're breathing on each other, their, you know, excreta is getting contaminated with each other's, they're sneezing on each other. So they're able to pass microbes between each other. And this is what we saw happen with SARS. The SARS virus is a virus of bats, most likely. Probably lived in bats for a long time, didn't cause any trouble. Mm. Well, then bats are brought into a wet market. And in the wet market, the virus from the bats was able to get into cats. And cats are very vulnerable to this virus and allowed the virus to change in ways that then allowed it to jump into humans. So this is kind of this odd sequence of events that we are making more and more likely by bringing wild animals together in these strange conglomerations. So we kind of create pathogens by lining up all these unlikely events together.
A lot of this is personal for you, Sonia Shah. Your family had, still has, episodes of MRSA, the secondary, sometimes lethal infection people can pick up in a hospital when they're being treated for something else. I hope I'm stating that accurately. From your own experience and research, what do we need to do to better prevent and address these potential threats, these microbial threats?
Well, the one that we have is the MRSA, which we acquired from the community, actually. So this is something that started in hospitals and prisons and then spilled out. And now people are just getting it from the general environment. My son most likely picked it up from a turf field when he was playing soccer.
Wow.
And, you know, and it's a pretty serious infection. And once you have it, it doesn't seem like you can get rid of it. And then it passed on to his brother and to me and, you know, and so on, despite all of the measures we took to prevent that from happening. But I think one of the problems that we face today is that we, as a society, have for many decades relied on biomedicine to kind of protect us from infection. You know, we've stopped thinking of infectious disease as something that really affects our lives in any serious way because it's, you know, the idea is, oh, well, we'll just take an antibiotic. Oh, we'll just get a vaccine. But what we're seeing with these new pathogens is that we can't develop drugs and vaccines fast enough to contain them before a lot of people experience untreatable disease. So what we really need to do is go back to more basic fundamental preventive measures where we're looking at the conditions that lead to these pathogens emerging and trying to minimize those rather than what we do now, which is wait until infection occurs, wait until it starts erupting, and once the fire is lit, then we try to put it out with drugs and vaccines. It just takes too long to develop new drugs and vaccines, and these pathogens, you know, they spread exponentially.
When you think about pandemics, Sonia, what worries you most right now?
I find the Zika virus somewhat more worrying than I think a lot of people do. I mean, I'm not of childbearing age, but the cryptic nature of this virus that spreads in mosquitoes and causes birth defects, that is very unusual. And the fact that so many people can have it and not know, and I think, you know, it's very hard to avoid the bites of these particular mosquitoes. And if it does cross over into some of the other Aedes mosquitoes that we have in this country that are much more common than Aedes aegypti, we only have Aedes aegypti in, you know, the Gulf Coast area in Florida and Texas, but we have Aedes albopictus, which has caused outbreaks of Zika in the past, that mosquito is all over the place. I live with it here in Baltimore. About 60% of the U.S. population is exposed to that mosquito. So if this virus is able to spread into that mosquito, and mind you, it already has switched hosts, like it already has done that several times, that it's jumped from one species of mosquito to another. If it does that here, then, you know, there'll be a much larger swath of the population that will be vulnerable to Zika. You know, at this point, we're not going to have a Zika vaccine for 3 to 10 years. By then, you know, everyone who is vulnerable to it or susceptible to it or living in places where these mosquitoes are, it's probably going to be exposed.
Sonia Shah is a science writer. Her new book is called Pandemic, Tracking Contagions from Cholera to Ebola and Beyond. Sonia, great to speak with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
For an update on Zika, we turn now to Christian Lindmeier, a spokesperson for the World Health Organization. He joins me from Geneva. So we just heard from Sonia Shah, the author of Pandemic, telling me that she's more worried about Zika than any other outbreak, simply because it is so cryptic. Is that warranted?
Zika is definitely very scary right now, and the main reason for this, that there are many unknowns about it. We don't yet know what it's responsible for. We don't yet know if all the microcephaly cases, the deformations in babies' heads, are caused by it, whether other neurological syndromes like the Guillain-Barré syndrome are caused by it. And that unknown is what scares people a lot. But in other terms, it doesn't kill as many people as even malaria or as dengue. So I think in numbers of death, it's definitely not winning. But in the scare factor right now, especially in the female childbearing age population, it is definitely ranking very high and it's very understandable.
Mm. So let's go through all that point by point. Start with where Zika, at least with this current crisis, where Zika has now been found. How many countries are we talking about?
Right now, we're talking about 52 countries that have reported Zika outbreaks since 2007. But we should also note that 5 out of those have already happened earlier and have concluded.
Let's talk about the evidence that Zika is causing some cases of microcephaly is not conclusive, but it is mounting. What do we know for sure right now about the link between the virus and birth defects?
What we do know is that we have increases of microcephaly throughout Brazil while we have a huge outbreak of Zika. So this we know. And we've seen Guillain-Barré syndrome rise in at least 7 countries now where we also see Zika outbreaks. So this is what we know. But we do not know whether these are definitely linked. We also have seen sexual transmission reported in a few cases, but we also don't know what the viral load is or if that is possible in any case or if this is something which every traveler has to be worried about. It doesn't look like it. So again, while we are collecting piece after piece of a big puzzle, we don't know the size of the puzzle.
So microcephaly, it's a condition where babies are born with abnormally small heads. Remind us what Guillain-Barré syndrome is.
Guillain-Barré syndrome is a neurological syndrome. It usually starts with some sort of tingling in the limbs and that sort of paralyzing. But if treated early, it has a very good chance of recovery and very few people have long-term effects with it.
There are studies, the first comparative studies, tracking pregnant women who were and were not infected by Zika. They're underway now in Brazil and Colombia. What will those studies tell us about Zika that we don't already know, and when will those results be out?
Well, these are just other pieces of the puzzle, because we need to establish, of course, now, could it be Zika alone which causes this? Could it be Zika with some other infection? This would be very important to find out a certain percentage of a risk factor, how likely it is for a pregnant woman to contract anything like this if Zika is responsible. How likely is it that once bitten, you actually have to worry? Or can you travel? Is personal protection enough? Or do you need more? Should you completely avoid travel during pregnancy? What are the limiting factors? So the whole world basically is watching right now, which makes it such a scary scenario.
The virus seems to be moving rapidly across the Americas, at least South America anyway. As people get infected and gain immunity, are the number of cases of microcephaly and Guillain-Barré syndrome expected to decrease?
The normal development would be, as we know from other infectious diseases like dengue or chikungunya, that after a while, the population reaches an amount of normal immunity. We do not yet know how long this immunity would last, whether it's years or even longer. Therefore, we could expect the Zika virus infections to go in waves. And if the virus is responsible for microcephaly in Guillain-Barré, then, of course, we could expect infections also in a wave. But we don't know yet how long these waves would last. But hopefully, of course, research and development has caught up by then and may have given us enough protection to avoid further waves.
Christian Lindmeier, spokesman for the World Health Organization, joining us from Geneva. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.